Awesome. Thank you, Brad, for sharing your story with us. Good morning, good morning, good morning. My name is Anthony, and I'm Director of Outreach and First Impressions here at Hoboken Grace, and I'm excited to continue this conversation that we started last week called Story, all about the stories of our lives. And I just want to echo what Justin said. If you are here for the first time, welcome. Make yourself feel right at home. A big shout out to those who are watching on live stream and listening onto the podcast. Hope you are well as well. So Story. Last week, we learned some pretty powerful truths about the stories of our lives. First and foremost, we learned that we all have a story, whether we like to admit it or not. And secondly, our stories are part of a much larger story that God is trying to tell. Now, I want to encourage you, if you weren't here last week or you didn't get a chance to listen to it, to go back and listen to the live stream or listen to the podcast, and because we learned some really powerful truths, because I think it's easy to say stories do indeed have power. Power in our life. And a lot of you reached out to me this week, whether it's via email or in person, and you're really wrestling with your story and really kind of fighting through some parts of it, which I think is great. It means that you're coming to terms with the fact that you do have a story to tell and you want to be able to tell it well. And then some of you are here today, and maybe, you know, you came last week and you're still not sure how you feel about this whole God thing, and you're not really sure what kind of story he's telling in your life, but by you being here today and you listening to that, I'm here to tell you that he is currently writing another chapter in the story of your life. But I think one of the main questions I got last week is like, okay, Anthony, I can get on board that I have a story. I can get on board that God's, you know, story is something that I need to tell, but how do I tell my story? And last week I gave you a question to write on your note card, and that question was this: what is God doing in my life right now? Simple, right? Just tell exactly what God is doing in my life right now. But sometimes that's not the whole story, right? Sometimes we need to unpack it. We need to dig a little bit deeper. One of the ways that my wife and I bond, one of the many ways my wife and I bond, is through our mutual love of malls. It's true. She loves shopping, and I don't know what it is. I love malls. I love walking around malls. I love window shopping. I love people watching. I'm a big fan of the food court. Love malls. I do. I love going. I don't know what it is, but it's something that we're like, you know, most couples are like, hey, go to the mall. Dana's like, you want to go to the mall? I'm like, yes. Yes, I do. Because I do. I just love experiencing different malls, especially new malls. If it's a mall that I've never been in before, you know, one of the first places I go is to that directory, right? The directory where the map of the mall is, and I look for that bright red star, right? Or that little triangle that says what? It says, you are here. Exactly. Exactly, because I think those directories are a lot like the stories of our lives, if you think about it. Like here we are right now, but I need to draw back to see the bigger picture. Sometimes I need to see where I've gone to know where I'm going. And really, when we look at our stories, they're kind of like that directory. We are here. This is where we've come from, and this is where we're going. Because one of the things that I can guarantee you is that there are going to be times when we have to tell our story, when we're going to be confronted with that reality. We're going to be in the moment, you are here, and somebody is going to ask you to tell your story. And it's interesting. We can either be ready for it and go forth and tell the story, or we can run from it. The only reason I know this is true, it's happened in my own life, but Peter also wrote about it. In 1 Peter, he says, instead, you must worship Christ as the Lord of your life, and if someone asks you about your hope as a believer, always be ready to explain it. And that my hope for you today is to be able to walk out of here with the tools that are necessary in order to tell your story, God's story, to anyone you come in contact with. And there are times when we find it easier to share our story or easier to share what God's doing in our life, right? Like maybe you're in a dinner group right now and you've been in a dinner group for a little while and you've gotten to know the people that are in your dinner group, so you find it a little bit easier to share with the people that, you know, might be of like minds your story. Maybe it's easier to share it with your family, or, you know, that they've known your story, they've seen where you've come from. But there are times that we are put into a situation where sharing our story isn't the most easiest. Whether it's at work or even on the plane with some stranger next to you. I mean, really at any time you can be confronted with the reality that you need to tell your story. There was an experience a few years ago. One of my best buddies, he was an usher at my wedding. We were in grad school together. Then he came and worked with me in the city. I mean, we were literally saw each other for about every day for about 6-7 years straight. And he's a good friend of mine, but he's always told me, "Anthony, listen, I know you're a believer and all that stuff, but I'm an atheist." I'm like, "Cool, we can still be friends, right? We can still eat together, we can still hang out, all that good stuff." And he's a really dear friend of mine. And one day, we're all sitting around, he invited me to one of his poker nights. And you can pray for me later, but I went. And I went, and I wanted to hang out with him and meet a bunch of his friends, and, you know, and so I went out. He lived in up in Inwood, and we were hanging out around this table, and I was meeting all of his buddies, and there was this one guy that got out way too early, right? He was just really overconfident in his cards, and he went all in real early and just lost it all. And sometimes you buy in again, but this guy decided he was going to play like the Jimmy Fallon of the night and just ask a bunch of questions and annoy us. And he's like, "Hey, what about this? What about that?" And the first question out of his mouth, because he felt like he needed to dictate the conversation that night, was, "What do you guys feel about, how do you guys feel about God?" And I was like, "Really? That's where you start. That's your icebreaker. That's your hello, how are you, what do you do for a living, you know?" All these people, they don't necessarily all know each other, but his opening statement was, "How do you guys feel about God?" And then they start to go around the room. Right? One of them's like, "I don't really believe all that. Yeah, I don't understand that. No, I don't really understand. I don't know what to do." And as it's getting closer to me, it starts to get warmer in the room. And then it shows up to me, and I'm sitting there with a really good hand, and I wanted to run. And it came to me, and he said, "What about you, Anthony?" And I said, "Yeah. Yeah, I'm a believer. I believe." And it was always one of those moments that, like, if a record was playing, it would screech and stop and everyone would look at you. You know, it's kind of what it felt like. And, you know, you could hear a pin drop in there. And then I slowly but steadily just started to kind of tell why. And then when I was done, it paused. It looked at me and the guy went, "Okay, I'll take 2 cards. That was it. And then his next question is like, "What's your favorite movie?" I was like, but, and then I'm not saying that, you know, that after I told my story that everybody around that room, you know, was like, "Well, let's go in the bathtub and get baptized." No, that's not what happened. You know, that's not this amazing part of the story. No. The whole point of it is that, yeah, I was worried. Yeah, I was nervous. Yeah, I thought they would kick me out or that I was going to be ridiculed all night. But at the end of the day, you know, I was confronted with the opportunity to tell my story, and I told the story of how God was working in my life. And yeah, I was nervous. And the only reason I think, I mean, obviously God was there to be able to walk me through it, but I think it's important to know how to tell our story. And there's this beautiful passage, beautiful story in the life of the Apostle Paul in the book of Acts that really kind of gives us a great insight into how we can begin to learn how to share our story well. And in this particular story, let me set the scene for you a little bit. But so this is towards the end of the book of Acts, right? And if you remember, the book of Acts is written by Luke. It's right after it's kind of like part two of Luke's book. And what happens is at the beginning of Acts is when we see the end of Jesus has risen from the dead, and he has told his disciples to go and to make disciples and to speak spread the good news through the ends of the earth. And so Acts is really about the beginning of the church and how the church and the good news of Jesus Christ spread throughout the lands. And towards the end of the book of Acts, we find the Apostle Paul has been imprisoned. And he gets this incredible opportunity to literally state his defense, state his story in front of the king and a bunch of the Roman leaders. All right, so the king's name is King Agrippa. And if you can imagine sitting in this Senate, really, with tons and tons of Roman leaders, right? They all worship Caesar. They all, report to Caesar. This is the Caesarian part of the society. So you could, call this the Caesarian section of the story. And just stay with me, folks. That's the kind of jokes you're getting all day. And so what ends up happening, some of you are like getting it now. I'm like, oh yeah, all right, that's a good one. So, all right, let me just cut to the chase. So what ends up happening is, this king, all right, this king has quite an interesting history when it comes to prosecuting those who believe the good news of Jesus Christ. For instance, his great grandfather had tried to kill Jesus as a baby. His grandfather was the one that had John the Baptist beheaded. His father is the one that killed the Apostle James. So it's highly unlikely that this king was going to be very favorable towards the Apostle Paul. So that's where we're at right now. And Paul is brought out of his prison cell, and he's literally in chains, and he is there to more or less defend his life in front of all of these Roman leaders. And it starts in chapter 26, verse 1. It says, "Then Agrippa," that's the king, "said to Paul, 'You may speak in your defense.' So Paul, gesturing with his hand, started his defense. 'I am fortunate, King Agrippa, that you are the one hearing my defense today against all these accusations made by the Jewish leaders. For I know you are an expert on all Jewish customs and controversies. Now, please listen to me patiently. As the Jewish leaders are well aware, I was given a thorough Jewish training from my earliest childhood among my own people and in Jerusalem. If they would admit it, they know that I have been a member of the Pharisees, the strictest sect of our religion." So he's basically saying, you all know who I was. I was a Pharisee, and it's interesting when you learn about who the Pharisees are. There was this ancient Jewish sect that held strongly to tradition and the law, and they were very pretentious and they were very boastful, and the way they treated people, these Pharisees, it wasn't really fair, you see. And I told you, stay with me, folks. Stay with me, but you're always going to remember that now. You're welcome. But Paul was a Pharisee, and he basically said, this is who I am. This is who I was, and most of you saw it. There's a story I've shared with you all before, but it's perfect illustration of this. One of my dearest friends who I've known since first grade asked me to officiate his wedding. And when we first, Dana and I first got married, we flew out to Colorado where I'm from, and all of my buddies, my core group of guys when I was growing up that I've known forever were going to be the groomsmen. It was going to be a great reunion. They were going to get to meet Dana for the first time. And it was just really exciting. And then we got to the rehearsal dinner, and we literally sit down, and everybody was meeting my wife, and we're hanging out, and we're talking, and I didn't become a believer until I was in graduate school, folks, and so literally, my buddy Zach, the first thing he comes out of his mouth is like, "Anthony, remember that time that you did?" I was like, "Shut up!" And then story after story started to come out, and I was like, "Dana's gonna leave me. She's gonna leave me. She has no idea who she married." But it was so, this is who I was. And it's interesting to see that this is the same guy who asked me to officiate his wedding. He saw something that was different in my life. And most, all of these guys saw it too. This is who I was. This is who I was. And you all can attest to it. It's the same thing that's happening here for Peter or for Paul. And he continues. He says, in verse 6, he says, "Now I'm on trial because of my hope in the fulfillment of God's promise made to our ancestors. In fact, that is why there are the 12 tribes of Israel zealously worship God night and day, and they share the same hope that I have. Yet, Your Majesty, they accuse me for having this hope. Why does it seem incredible to any of you that God can raise the dead? And since he had said that Agrippa was, an authority in Jewish law, then he would know for sure that it would be a belief that God could raise people from the dead. And so he continues in verse 9, he says, listen, I used to believe that I ought to do everything I could to oppose the very name of Jesus the Nazarene. Indeed, I did just that in Jerusalem. Authorized by the leading priest, I caused many believers to be sent to prison. And I cast my vote against them when they were condemned to death. Many times I had opposed the punishment in the synagogues to get them to curse Jesus. I was so violently opposed to them that I even chased them down in the foreign cities. Last week we saw that, something that we can all get in common with are visual stories, right? So we used a lot of movies to illustrate our point. And I teach the story class at Amplify and constructed it as if it was a screenwriting class to understand how we can break that down. And this particular part of it, there's something that's called in screenwriting, it's called the backstory. All right. In every great story is the moment when you kind of learn the main character's past and understand how it motivates him or her. A backstory is disclosed through the action in the plot, and the purpose is to really kind of deepen the story at hand. As we understand the past, we can better see the present and where we're going. Just like everyone has a story, everyone has a backstory, and it, our families of origin, our experiences, our successes, our failures, they all dramatically affect the way that we see the world. They color the way that we feel about ourselves and how we see God. When I was in third grade, I had a teacher tell me that God more or less keeps track of all the good things you do and all the bad things you do. And every time you do something right, you receive something that's called a grace. And the more graces you receive, the closer to heaven you get. Well, I was in third grade. An adult was telling me this. I thought for sure, why would they lie to me? I had no idea what the truth was, and so I believed that's how God interacted with all of us. And it was interesting. I started to interact with life that way. And being in third and fourth grade, I actually started to worry about death. Something that no third or fourth grader should consistently ask their parents about. But I was worried. I didn't know how good I was doing. Where are my goods? Where are my bads? There wasn't a website I can check or a book that I could go to see if my goods were outweighing my bads. And this started to color my relationship with God. And as I grew older, I really started to kind of wash my hands at the whole God thing and thought, how am I supposed to know how I'm doing? I can just hope that the goods outweigh the bads. How am I supposed to know? And that really colored how I saw God and how I interacted with him. By the time I got into high school and even in undergrad, I really didn't want anything to do with him, because it colored the way that I viewed who he was and how I interacted with him. And that's why we have to listen to each other's stories in order to better understand someone. To see where they've been and what they've been through is a good indication of why they think the way they think or the way that they are. In order to tell the story of God working in our lives, we have to see who we were before God came into the picture. This is who I was. This is my backstory. And I think backstories are crucial for people to know who we're telling our stories to, because they need to know where we're coming from as well. And I think this day and age, we desperately need to hear each other's backstories. So many of us are so quick to be like, well, he has no clue, or that person is an idiot, they have no idea. When really, if we took the time to learn his or her backstory, it would help us to better understand their point of view. But we have to be willing to talk to one another in order to hear those stories. And we mentioned this last week, but it's so important that it bears repeating. Some of us are afraid to tell our stories specifically because of our backstories and what's in them. What will people think of me? Guys, God came into our lives despite our brokenness, despite what we've done, and brought us back to him anyway. What do we say every week? Doesn't matter where you've been, doesn't matter what you're doing, God is pursuing you. And here's the truth, guys. God doesn't pursue you because you're good. He pursues you because he's good. I was able to tell the story of how God was working in my life when I realized that I wasn't the good news. Jesus is. And when I realized that, I began to tell my story in a way that I didn't have to be ashamed of what was in my past, because God had redeemed that too. Look at what Paul said. I mean, Paul killed Christians. He imprisoned them. I love what he says there. He says, I was so violently opposed to them. He says, this is who I was before God stepped into the picture. And he continues. He says, one day I was on such a mission to Damascus, armed with the authority and commission of the leading priests. About noon, Your Majesty, as I was on the road, a light from heaven, brighter than the sun, shone down on me and my companions. We fell down, and I heard a voice saying to me in Aramaic, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It is useless for you to fight against my will. Who are you, Lord? I asked. And the Lord replied, I am Jesus, the one you're persecuting. Now get on your feet, for I have appeared to you to appoint you as my servant and witness. You are to tell the world what you have seen and what I will show you in the future. And I will rescue you from both your own people and the Gentiles. Yes, I am sending you to the Gentiles to open their eyes so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God. Then they will receive forgiveness for their sins and be given a place among God's people who are set apart by faith in me. So after Paul presents his backstory, we see where he's come from. He then focuses on the how, on how God is working in his life right now. He talks about the moment that God walked into his life and began changing directions. In screenwriting world, this is called the inciting incident. Every story is there's a moment when the protagonist is kind of spun right out of control and catapulted into a series of events or decisions that make up the content of the narrative, right? It's called the inciting incident. It sends the character in a new direction. All the things that happen to you, the good, the bad, these make up your inciting incidents. There is no story without an inciting incident. One of my inciting incidents came when I was in graduate school in Alabama. God used a television preacher to help me to understand what grace truly is in my life. True be told, he had this amazing experience with God on the road to Damascus. I had this amazing experience with God on a road in Montgomery, Alabama, in my apartment. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm sitting on the chair. I was too lazy to look for the remote, honest to God truth, and I was listening to what turned out to be a 1967 rebroadcast of Billy Graham at Madison Square Garden, and he was talking all about grace. That God doesn't count your rights and wrongs against you. That he doesn't hold these things against you. That once you walk into this relationship with Jesus Christ, your slate is wiped clean. It literally changed the direction of my life right there. And if you know, at the end of most of Billy Graham's crusades, he would invite people to come down and receive God. And I got out of my chair and I'm just crying. And I went to the television. And that's when I changed direction. That was one of my inciting incidents. And the next day, I jumped into a church in a small group. I started serving. I wanted to learn how God was working in my life, because for so long, I believed a lie about him. And I always say that I find it no mistake and no coincidence that God brought me into full-time ministry at a place called Hoboken Grace as a constant reminder of that grace. The other thing I love about this passage is that the way that God addresses him in this, he says, Saul, Saul. And it's interesting. I mean, we call him Paul now, right? Did they screw something up in the translation, you know? Were we supposed to use an S instead of a P? It's actually all Paul. You see, Saul is his Hebrew name. He was a Pharisee, right? And he believed that the best way to, you know, be this highfalutin Pharisee was to have a real good, strong Hebrew name, and so that's why he went by the name Saul. But his father was a Roman soldier, which made Saul, by default, a Roman citizen. So imagine this. God tells him he has to reach both the Jews and the Gentiles, those who are Jewish and those who aren't Jewish, so pretty much everybody. And the most the easiest way to do that, he changes his name to the Roman version, to the Gentile version, to the gentler version, if you will, the name Paul. It's interesting the way that he chose this name, because he believed that he could reach the people better by having a name that kind of crossed borders. Now, I'm not saying you have to go and change your name, but I think we can take a hint from the way that Paul does mission work here, that we need we need not to be confrontational, we need not to be judgmental, we just simply have to meet people where they are. Interestingly enough, that passage I shared earlier, 1 Peter 3:15, the next verse, 3:16, is all about being gentler and kinder in sharing your story. I also love that he called him by name. That Jesus said, Saul, Saul. Because, you know, maybe some of you are here today and some of you were here last week, and maybe it's not even in the story series, but it's in a lot of different series, is that you sit here and whether it's myself or Pastor Chris or Justin or somebody else that's giving the conversation, and you come up to us afterwards, you're like, Anthony, I feel like God used that message to speak directly to me. He does. That's what the Holy Spirit does in your life. It nudges you in those directions. And this week is no different. Last week we invited you because we're doing something very special, because we want you to tell your stories so much. We believe that stories have power so much that we want to give you the easiest and the best way opportunity to do that. And that is, after the service, you can go, or even during the service, you're like, Anthony, I'm done. Go to the fourth floor, meet somebody at the elevator. They'll be there. I think it's Jackie's going to be there at the elevator. Can take you up to the fourth floor where our video team and our story team is right now to be able to capture your story. And just like me at that poker game, I'm sure some of you are nervous, I'm sure some of you are scared, but you're still getting that nudge. Just like Paul did when he came across Jesus on the road to Damascus, he called him by name. That nudge is the same thing as Jesus calling you by name, going, hey, you need to tell the story. So I want to encourage you, go, let people know how God is working in your life. Paul continues, he says, in verse 19, he says, and so, King Agrippa, I obeyed that vision from heaven. I preached first to those in Damascus, then in Jerusalem, and throughout all Judea, and also to the Gentiles, that all must repent of their sins and turn to God, and prove they have changed by the good things they do. Some Jews arrested me in the temple for preaching this, and they tried to kill me. But God has protected me right up to this present time, so I can testify to everyone from the least to the greatest. I teach nothing except what the prophets and Moses said would happen, that the Messiah would suffer and be the first to rise from the dead, and in this way announce God's light to the Jews and Gentiles alike. And finally, after hearing this, the king responds. And he says, Agrippa interrupted him. Do you think you can persuade me to become a Christian so quickly? And I love Paul's response. Paul replied, whether quickly or not, I pray to God that both of you and everyone here in this audience might become the same as I am, except for these chains. I said this last week, but it bears repeating. None of us can make somebody become a follower of Christ. Only God can do that. But we are called, however, to share our story, to tell the story of what God is doing in our life. The most important part of Paul's testimony is also a really important part when writing a screenplay, and that is the word authenticity. Authenticity at its root is by telling the truth. This is what happened to me. This is the true story of my life. That's what gave me the confidence to share my story at that poker night. I mean, have you ever watched a movie and felt like, that would never happen in real life? Or you ever watch a movie and things were just tied up with a nice little bow at the end of it, and you're like, nah, life doesn't work like that. That's because we as humans are connected. We understand what it means for truth. That's why we crave authenticity. You see, if the version of our events that we tell in our story are great and it includes no conflict or struggle or brokenness, the people that are here hearing our story are not going to believe us as well. It's by casting ourselves in this light, we're lying not just about who we really are, but what God is like. When Paul stood before King Agrippa, he told him simply, logically, and clearly his life before salvation, what happened when he met Christ, and what it looks like now. Now, some of you are here today, and you're thinking to yourself, well, Anthony, that's all fine and great, but I walked into this relationship with Christ at a young age, and you know, I can't think of those deep, dark things I did, you know, prior to me trusting Christ at a young age. And I say, well, listen, there are times in our life, no matter how long you've been on this walk with God, where you have faced an incredible time of pain, of brokenness, of struggle, of a decision to make. That is what it's all about. What incident caused you to turn to God, and how did God use that incident in your life? That's what I'm talking about. In screenwriting terms, to remember how to tell your story, you can use these three words: backstory, inciting incident, and authenticity. Or if you want to just lay it down into real easy terms, before, how, and after. This is who I was before God walked into my life or into this situation. This is how my life changed, and this is how God continues to step into my life. Paul's testimony is exactly that. This is who I was, this is what happened, and this is how God is rescuing me. So on your seat, I asked you to pull out your note cards last week. I want you to do that again now. Pull out your note cards. I'm watching you, and none of you are doing it. Pull out those cards. There are pens on the seat in front of you. If not, there are pens that you received at the door. And I want you to write down these three questions. These three questions. Who were you? Who were you? Number two, what was the underlying problem that God stepped into? It's a longer one. What is the underlying problem that God stepped into? And last, how is the hero saving you? How is the hero saving you? Remember, we're not the heroes of our story. God is. Again, those three questions. Who were you? What was the underlying problem that God stepped into? And how is the hero saving you? If you go to hobokengrace.info, the online program, those three questions are written there as well. This isn't just the moment that you first experienced. I mean, this happens every day in life. We're constantly being exposed to the broken parts of us, underlying problems, the tensions, and the hero is working within us to save us, to free us. And for those of you who are still wondering if God is writing your story because you're not sure if you believe in him or not, I'm here to tell you that he is. He is writing your story. He's writing a bestseller. All it needs to do is get published, and that is when you trust in him. I always think God works in really funny ways. This was a Bible that was left here by somebody named Benjamin, and it was gifted to him in 2003. And I apologize, Benjamin, but it's mine now. This is the inscription in the Bible. It's handwritten, and it says, "This is a story about a creator who greatly loves his creation, but they turn from him and go their own way. He tries to win them back through prophets, pestilence, and perilous journeys, but they still rebel. So the only way that he can finally get their attention is to take the biggest risk of all, to become like one of them. He gives up everything to join their humanity and to show them a love and a better way, culminating in a final dramatic proof of love by suffering the punishment they deserved through his death on the cross, and then miraculously coming back to remind them that all who follow him will live forever. That's an amazing story. It's his story, and it's your story, and we are made to live in his story. I want to encourage you today, don't hold on to that story any longer. Tell it. And maybe it starts today by you going to the elevator, by going up to the fourth floor and telling what God is doing in your life right now. That is my prayer. Because here's the truth, guys. You never, ever know how God is going to use your story to change the life of someone else. Will you pray with me? Father, I want to first and foremost just thank you for what you're doing in the lives of our family. And I just want to right now pray for those who are wondering about their own story. Maybe they haven't walked into this relationship with you yet, and they're wondering if they even have a story to tell. My prayer is that you will make it known that not only do you have a story to tell through their life, but that it's not too late. That no matter what is in their story right now, that you can redeem it, that you've already have redeemed it, that that's what Christ came for. And Father, for those of us who are here today who are sitting on our story, who have not yet released our story, who are worried about what's in it, I pray that you will let them know that that part of their story has already been redeemed. It's already been paid for. Christ has already come for that. But it is important that we let other people know what you are doing in the life of our family, in our lives. Help people to tell your story. Because only then can our stories have true power. It's because of Jesus, and it's in his name we pray. Amen.